Hello, welcome to another edition of Egalia Chats. I'm Eric Meyer. I'm a developer advocate at Egalia.
And I'm Brian Cardell, and I'm also a developer advocate at Egalia. And today we have a guest from Egalia. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes. Hello, Eric and Brian. This is Alex. I work in Egalia. I'm a developer in the WebKit team, and I've been working in web engines development for a long time. Nowadays, what I do is that I basically not just developing, but also try to coordinate a lot of the technical details in the development of the WebKit efforts inside Egalia.
So it's strange that I was looking today, and you know, we're approaching 80 episodes of Egalia Chats that we've recorded. We don't number our episodes, so I never really know how far we are. But well, you know, we've never really had a show on WebKit. Not because we haven't wanted to. We've made some efforts to do it in the past, but something always falls through. But I don't think a lot of people probably know about, you know, a lot of people know that Google is the steward of Chrome, but then you have Edge and Brave, you know, you have other kind of contributors. But Egalia is a big, big contributor on WebKit, like 16% of all commits. That's huge, like by comparison to Google. But do you want to talk a little bit about like the WebKit project and Egalia's involvement, and maybe if there are other parties also involved that you could give some credit to?
Yeah. Actually, I can. Like, there are facts that you are explaining that not many people know maybe about this project, but we have been working in WebKit for even before like Google did the fork of the web engine. So it has been a very long time. We even had like the initial web engines hackfest in Egalia. I think it was 2009, and people from Google came even. So it was like really interesting. And we have been like the number two in the amount of commits that we are like providing for the last years. So, but there are like more people. Like in the past, there were more before like Google left, but nowadays, there are still like more companies like Sony and other companies that are also like contributing to WebKit and providing work that, or Microsoft or other companies. But we have Red Hat that it includes the engine in their distributions. I'm not completely sure about the current situation and how they are like including it. But in the past, they were like active, and nowadays they are also like still helping with some things.
Yeah, so it's a long time to be involved with a project for absolutely no reason. So there must be a reason that we stay so involved. Maybe you could tell us about Egalia's involvement and
Yes, I can. Yes, since the beginning, like in the beginning, we were like a company that was focused in the GNOME desktop environment, and we were like part of the developers that were creating the browser in that Linux distribution, and it was like based on Firefox web engine. But at some point they decided that they were not that interesting in allowing an API for embedders. So at that point Apple released WebKit, so that we decided that it was like a good option to give it a try, and it worked. And then we started contributing to it, and we were creating projects around it. And because of this success in integration and the product that the software product that was created, some companies decided that it was a good idea to integrate that specific engine in their products, including like embedded devices and other different kind of embedded options like applications. And they were asking us for support doing that integration. So that's how it started. And then it has evolved in a lot of different devices and things that we have done along the years, like from set-top boxes to cars to planes, all different medical devices, kitchen appliances, and I think it's in a lot of different places that not everyone knows. And yet, an interesting point in the, like, just to summarize, in the history of the contributions that we have done is that initially it was basically everything based on GTK. So the people that wanted to use the engine, they were forced to include also the GTK library. And that was like kind of like a big requirement for some of these companies that were creating small embedded devices. So yeah, I think it was in 2014 or a little, we started working on that earlier. We basically removed that dependency. It was like the initial development for what we nowadays know is WPE, which is like a specific, specifically created for engines, for embedded, an engine specifically created for embedded devices that has minimal requirements regarding the libraries that you need to include. There are not typical in embedded devices, but are typical in a desktop like the GTK.
Okay, so WPE, what is WPE for those who are listening who don't really know what it is?
WPE is basically a WebKit port. I'm not sure if everyone knows what a WebKit port is, but it's basically a way to configure the web engine so that you are able to run the engine in a system. And WPE is the WebKit web engine for embedded devices, which means that we try to integrate the whole WebKit in small devices and making it run and perform so that you can use it to create your own applications or your own browsers.
Yeah. So WPE, one would presume that that stands for WebKit port embedded. Is that actually true? Okay.
No, it's not. Well, yeah. Nowadays it's an acronym, but it's not an acronym anymore, I mean. So it's basically WPE.
It's one of those acronyms that maybe stood for something, but now it doesn't.
Yeah,
there's a term for that, and I've forgotten what it is. But so it's WebKit, but it's WebKit like pared down, essentially. Like certain things have been turned off or changed so that it can be used on, like set-top boxes or seatback displays or in dash displays or that sort of thing, right?
Yes, exactly. And actually, well, it's mostly adaptation and focus in Linux devices, because as you can imagine, Apple does not care about Linux. So what we do is basically first porting it to Linux and then making sure that the devices that are able to run Linux and are really small devices are able to run the web engine and the features that customers want to use for their UIs in a way that performs as expected.
Sorry, what kinds of things is it that people want to use for the UIs?
I think, in my opinion, because like it's my personal opinion, the reason that it fits very well with the web is because the web is very flexible in how you define the visual UI. So that's why a toolkit, what it means, like is too much restricted. So you cannot do whatever you want. So then there are multiple things. I mean, you can use, for instance, UIs that run an SVG image that you can click, or UIs that have like a form that you have to basically fill in to do something, or UIs that show like a video or like a movie or like a menu where you can pick the movie and then after that show the movie. And everything has to be sometimes like very visual, and then you can add effects or not. And the interesting part here, which is something that not many people understand, is that, well, the web runs well in your desktop because your desktop is like a big machine with a big GPU and a big CPU. But then when you move your web page, or in this case, your UI, to a small embedded device, then you don't have that hardware. You don't have that powerful device. So you have to restrict yourself to some things, and then there are other things that you can adapt, and then you can improve some other ways how the engine does something so that you are able to run your UIs in this kind of devices.
I think there are a lot of other aspects of that too. Like if you, like there are a lot of expertise in web technologies, right? So like it's very, very easy to find people who have experience in that, as opposed to maybe somebody who have experience with a UI toolkit that might work on a specific device, whatever, right? So the more kind of lingua franca we make HTML, JavaScript, and CSS to do the basic things, the more we have expertise readily available for that. And it's portable. And sometimes you want, you know, even like a unified design system that covers both your website and the embedded device or something. So yeah, I mean, it's pretty interesting. I had a lot of questions when I first got here because I was like, okay, I mean, I know in the abstract what, you know, that there's a web engine and it's not the same as a web browser. You know, I knew this 6 years ago or whatever, you know, but I didn't understand, like, how do I use it? Like, that's, you know, how do I use it? And in learning the process, one of the things that I learned that might be helpful toward Eric's question earlier as well, which is like, I think of like the WebKit project has sort of like the main bit that is WebKit is a Lego. We like Legos in engineering, right? But it's sort of like, it's not the bottom Lego or the top Lego. It's kind of the middle Lego. And so you have to put, like it provides these APIs, but it doesn't provide necessarily implementations for all of them, right? And so you have these APIs that are implemented maybe in the middle, but the individual ports have to provide implementation for them. Or also, it could be down to like your actual deployment, right? Like your actual deployment might provide some implementation. So that can be everything from like, well, I don't know, Alex, let's leave it to you to explain what kinds of things might be in there. And also, I don't know if maybe you want to compare it with Firefox or Chromium, because I never really understood how they're different, but like Firefox is like a browser project, and there's sort of like not one of those for WebKit, except for maybe the mini browser, which is also a thing that I only learned about after coming here. So
exactly. Yeah, you're describing it really well regarding like the metaphor about the Legos. Yes, basically the main difference between what we do in WebKit and what Chromium or Firefox are doing is that they provide a whole browser. So when they want to support Linux or Apple or Windows, they provide also like all the implementation for all the UI that they are creating. And the difference is that in WebKit, the core part is something that we share, but every company that is interested in supporting some system is providing the other parts. For instance, we in WP provide the Linux part, and we are also like starting to support Android too. And Apple is adding the support for all their devices, and Sony is adding the support for the PlayStations. So that's kind of like the Lego part, like the things that you need to integrate in the system. I guess it's easy to see, for instance, with multimedia that in Apple you have multimedia libraries and the engine has to use those multimedia libraries. In Linux you have a different kind of multimedia libraries and WebKit has to use those multimedia libraries. And the other part which is interesting is that we are allowing also that the people integrate WebKit as a software part, like a Lego part. But in case of Chromium or Firefox, they are providing an application. So what it means is that you compile the application as you use it. Even some people are just basically just using a compile application in their system, like in their desktop or in their phones. But in our case, what we provide is the part that you integrate to create a different application or a browser, which can be a browser, but it can be also like a UI or any other kind of applications. That's the main difference. And it can sometimes it's tricky even for technical people that are not in this lower level to figure out why is that important. But when you try to integrate Chromium and then change it so that you create your own browser even, and you start to realize that there is not a contract between Chromium and you to modify some parts, and then you start when you try to integrate back all the changes that happened in Chromium, you need to solve a lot of different conflicts in your code. then you realize that it would be great if you have like a stable API that you can use, and every time I integrate a new version, I don't have any issue. And that is basically what the WebKit API is doing. You provide the API, you use that API, and we have a contract, which is like a public contract in software, where we say we are not going to modify that API for any different version. So you can reliably use that API.
Which is a selling point that a lot of people like, and one of the reasons that it's chosen, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I think another thing that I learned, I don't know that learned as much as realized, is that embedded systems are different in some interesting ways. Like, you know, they're underpowered generally to begin with, right? Because the goal is often to make them as featureful as possible so that it's an interesting sales, an interesting experience, but also as cheap as humanly possible to make, right? And so I don't know what the situation is now, but at least when I started, I know that involved like a lot of systems that were still 32-bit that were being actively made. You know, I don't know if people are still actively making 32-bit systems, yeah, but
they are using still 32-bit, yes.
Yeah, so I mean, we're shipping 32-bit systems, and then the lifespan of of a phone, which is really high end, is I don't know. I mean, a lot of people replace them every 2 years. I think 5 years is probably a long time to have a phone, but like 5 years is not a long time to have like your cable box or like your car or right. Like, so these systems, they hang around for a long time in a lot of cases. Right. So, stable API makes a lot of sense, and, you know, having a system that can work, that, you know, works on these things, but it also provides some interesting and unique challenges that we have a lot of and always increasing expertise in, right?
Yes, exactly. Because as you can imagine, like as I said, Firefox and Chrome are also providing support for Linux. So we are providing exactly the same kind of specific part. So in that we are common. We have like common code in the end. Not common that we are using the same code, but that is doing basically the same thing, like in the system. But we have also like focus in this kind of devices, which means that, yeah, you have to provide good performance in a 32-bit device and you care about it. So you have to basically run the integrations to make sure that you don't regress in that situation, that the performance is the one that you expect. But even like companies that are big like Google, they are not going to provide probably like integration with the systems that they don't care that much. So if they are not creating an embedded device that is specific for 32-bit or something like that, they are not going to pay attention to that kind of code. So that's the kind of things that we try to do to differentiate not just the API, but also like how we do the integration in the systems that we care. And for instance, one of the main differences is that for us, Linux is kind of like the first class citizen. And that is not the case for a lot of the browsers that are currently being used. They can provide support for Linux, but it's not like the first call for them. So that also differentiates on how we deal with the issues that we have in those kind of systems.
It's a completely different funding model for a lot of other browsers. It's interesting because we say browsers, but WP isn't a browser.
Exactly. Yeah.
But
it's not a browser.
And that's also interesting because the things that you want to do, they have very different kind of security concerns, right? Like they're an interesting challenge that I think is more similar to other tools like Electron or something like that, where I do think we can probably use some more, like another layer of standardization or something. But yeah, I think it's really cool that we can, like, things are designed in such a way that we can open ways to do really interesting things with these embedded devices. So I worked just really briefly on a project at Egalia that was for a kind of like a food processor that has like a touch screen and interactive, and it had sort of like virtual knobs, and like they control the real temperature and the, you know, the motor and all that kind of stuff. And those also then have like hardware controls and things, but you know, the controls on that is different. The constraints on that are different than the constraints on the media player on your car, are different than something that would actually control your car, you know, like, and the web can be used to different extents with sort of like different sort of pluggable bits that you can control a lot about with a thing like WPE. I think it's cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's really interesting. One thing that came to my mind while you were talking is also that sometimes we need to differentiate embedded browsers with browsers that can be using embedded devices. Because sometimes I go to some conference and people are starting to talk about embedding a browser, like, and they talk about things like Electron. And for us, it's true that could be a goal at some point, but it's not the real goal for us. It's more like about embedded devices, embedding in embedded devices, which is kind of similar, but it's not the same thing, because when you want like embedded applications like Electron, it's very important for you to have like a web engine that is able to run in a lot of different systems, like, and they must include Windows, they must include Mac, they must include Linux. As I said before, for us, like nowadays, like the main development is in Linux. That wouldn't be an option for an engine that is used in an embedded system for an application. But it's really good for embedded devices. And the reason is like most of the embedded devices are using nowadays Linux or Android for running the system.
So one of the devices you mentioned, it was a while back, but it snagged in my head because it always does, is the PlayStation, the Sony PlayStation. Like, there's some part of my head that has heard enough times that I know that the Sony PlayStation uses WebKit. And yet every time I hear it, it's a little bit of a surprise. But that's still regarded an embedded device?
Well, yeah, I guess it is. It's a little bit more powerful, that's true. But it's still like an embedded device, because it has like a specific system and you have to change the integration with the system. And it's not like a full UI, like a full desktop UI where you can do whatever you want. And actually, even for Sony, it has changed and it has evolved during this time. Like initially they had, I think in PlayStation 3, I don't know much, but I think in PlayStation 3 they had like a specific browser that you can open and use it for browsing. And then they have kind of like limiting the use of the browser to like opening different things, and maybe you cannot use just a full browser anymore, because I guess the gaming industry thinks that now you can use your phone and then in the PlayStation you play but still they need to open sometimes web content. It makes sense, because if you have like a store and you want to open like a web page with a review of a game, you need to open
that. Yeah, so you need a web view.
That requires like a web engine, yes.
So we're talking about how these devices last like a long time and you want a stable API. But another thing that I wonder about is, you know, we make this WPE and, you know, you don't know what the future holds. It's always a tricky thing, right? Like, you don't know what the future holds. You don't know if maybe next year everybody will be like, why are we still making 32-bit APIs? Like, why? You know, like, it's not worth it anymore. It's not economically advantageous. We're not going to do that anymore. Or you don't know if, I don't know if touchscreens were always a part of the thing or how common they were, but they're very common now, right? I don't know if we had accounted for them when we made things originally. And I think, you know, XR is another example of this. Maybe, you know, maybe AI at some point will be very relevant. Voice input, definitely. Voice output, definitely. Like, there are all these things that, you know, if I was writing code 15 years ago, I would not have been prepared for. And one of the nice things about the web is that the web is generally pretty good about that kind of stuff. So we try to make things not bound to specific devices, not bound to specific inputs, like so that it grows, but it grows slowly and somewhat flexibly. But what does it mean for like a project like WebKit and WPE to like, do we find ourselves like coded in a corner sometimes? Like, do we find, yeah, I don't know. That's a long time to maintain a project. I've never maintained a project that long. So I'm just curious.
Yes, yes. That's exactly. I mean, first is that I agree with you, and probably you know better than me, that web, one of the strengths of the web is the evolution and being able to evolve with the hardware and the technology and all the new challenges, which is amazing. I mean, it started in the 90s. We didn't know. We didn't even have like the kind of GPUs that we have nowadays.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And then it's amazing that you are able to evolve software that it was, I mean, the initial lines of this software was, they were writing in the before, like in the past century, which is like something that reflects how it has evolved. And that is very powerful, and it's a strength, but it's true what you're saying, that sometimes it means also like you need to do a lot of work to like review what you have done, because you made decisions. I mean, I've been reviewing decisions that we made 15 of 20 years before. So it's kind of like difficult sometimes to understand what this will mean. Mm. And one of the changes that happened that is an example of this is that initially we were using a rendering library that was like the common rendering library in Linux, which is called Cairo. And it was really well maintained. It was created, and it has like a really amazing community for a long time, for some years.
It was kind of the de facto standard, right?
Yes, yes. At least for GNOME and multiple systems, it was, yes. And everyone was using it, and now this is still used. But then after some years, the development kind of stopped, and the companies that were like providing support for it, they were not like spending that much money, and then you had fewer releases, and the releases didn't include that many new features or new improvements. So
it's a little bit like that XKCD comic where it's like the blocks and then like one, you know, one block that holds it all up is like, you know, some open source developer working nights in his basement in Montana or something like that.
Well, we have in Linux some libraries like those. I have to say that Cairo, I don't think it's exactly that one. Maybe free type it is, I don't know. But Cairo is not exactly that one, because at some point there were not even anyone, and it was not that small. I mean, in the end, Cairo was like really big. And at some point, we were participating in the development, and a lot of like huge companies, like for instance, Nokia, was like spending a lot of money trying to support multiple hardware, because in a render library it's important to support operations in native hardware so that you render as fast as possible. And it created like also different kind of prototypes to rendering in GPU. It was kind of like the first library trying to do it. But yeah, it evolved in a way that, for instance, the GPU support was like removed because it was not even maintained at some point. And there were not releases because no one was maintaining it. Then someone from Red Hat came and did some release, trying to fix some issues, even memory leaks that were there. So at some point, like after using it for more than 10 years, we started to check if we could use something different. And after like a long time trying different options and studying the situation, we moved to use Skia, which is basically the same rendering library that Chromium uses and is implemented by Google, which it's really great, the collaboration that we do with them. And
I think Firefox also uses it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And And that is a good example of what you were saying, that you need to readapt the technology because when the projects are like that long, that that they are created in the past century.
I prefer the previous millennium.
Oh, geez. Oh.
Yeah.
But basically, WebKit is from the late 90s, more or less, because it was originally KHTML, right?
Yes.
And KSVG. And then I'm not sure what year. Do you know what year, anybody? What year Apple?
I think the initial code, I think, is 1999 or something like that. But Apple decided to use it later.
Yeah, what year? That's what I was looking for. I think David Hyatt announced something that they were going to try to do it on the WebKit list. Or not on the WebKit list, because there wasn't a WebKit, but on some mailing list.
According to Wikipedia, since I just pulled it up, it was January of 2003.
So I just checked the Git repository from WebKit, and the initial commits are from 2001.
There you go.
So I guess, I mean, even when they announced it in 2005, they started to work on it in 2001. And actually, I see that one of the original committers is Ken Kosienda, which I know I saw some pieces of news about him being the one that implemented the keyboard in the iPhone. So I guess it was kind of like that team that was creating like the initial technology that started the WebKit. And yeah, they basically, if I understand what they did, basically they fork those two projects as the initial code. And after that, basically they evolved it. And at some point they even tried to contribute back, but it was complex at some point, and then they decided to discard it. And then they, of course, they contacted a lot of the developers from the Qt environment to try to see if they can help. And one of those was our Nico and our Rob from Igalia nowadays, that they were like the initial KSVG contributors, and they were at some point collaborating with Apple, integrating this inside the engine. Yeah. So they have been, I think probably they are the ones that have been contributing to WebKit for longer inside Igalia, even previously to Igalia. So.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. And that's an interesting episode. Nico was like 15 or something like that when he was getting started in this.
It was really young.
we'll link that in the show notes, because it is a really interesting episode. You know, maybe what you thought we would like the project to be about and interested in, how we thought it would be, I don't know, consumed, used, probably was very different 15 years ago too, right? Like or 10 years ago or whatever. I don't know, how old is WPE?
I think it's, I mean, we originally started thinking about it in 2013, 2012, and the initial release or announcement, it was 2014.
Okay, so it's about 10 years, right? So, like, you know, I don't know that we knew any of that stuff about, you know, the goals, what we wanted to do, what we could do, what the future would look like. So you mentioned Android. I don't think that probably at that point we were imagining making a port for Android, right?
Completely.
It seemed way out of the things we were thinking. Can you talk about why we started exploring that in the first place?
Yeah. There were at that point, first, as you said, there were like things at that point that we were not even considering. But the nice thing about the web engines and software is that you basically can evolve in the directions that the interest of the market or the interest of the products are defining every year. For instance, in that moment, or like even before WP, we still had like X11 support, and that is something that nowadays we don't support anymore. And there are other technologies that we were also like supporting that they are not things that we are interested anymore. And for instance, there were like even technology about GPU rendering that were not something common at that point, and they had evolved a lot. That's why also Cairo was like an option at some point because everyone was doing CPU rendering. But then at some point, the GPU rendering was a thing in the 2D graphics, which is like also like interesting discussion about why they don't fit that much. So that also like put some pressure on us to use a library that could do something like that. And then, yeah, we are focused on Linux mainly because that was like kind of like the main system that every hardware company that they were creating boards that companies can use to create products, they were like focusing in Linux. They were creating like solutions for Linux. But after some point, Android was like also very common. And nowadays, I honestly don't know the figures, but like there are some boards that they have like better Android support. Some of them they have like better Linux support. So you have to make sometimes a decision, and depending on the company, they have to do it. And as I said, like in the past, we didn't pay that much attention. We created a prototype some years ago, but it was kind of like the prototype for the moment. But we have plans to, and we have like evolved the Android port a lot in the last. The last year, and we have plans to really making the Android port as a first class citizen in the near future. And hopefully like that brings also like the option to use WP in Android devices that, because we see that more and more people are using it to create embedded devices.
That gets into your distinction a little bit, because the distinction that you made earlier about like embedded applications versus embedded devices. So when you say Android, I immediately think like, ooh, can I get it on my phone?
That's
and well, I know the answer is sort of yes, but it's a mini browser and it's for testing and we don't publicize it or anything yet, maybe at some point. But there are interesting reasons I can imagine to do that. One of them is that I know a lot of people, you know, we have to make sure that our stuff works on Apple devices. And there are people around the world, like the vast majority of them actually, that don't have Apple, don't have, you know, iOS to test on. And so, you know, that's like Epiphany is the browser for Linux. And so, you know, I know plenty of people who have Linux that use Epiphany to, you know, it's not perfect, but they can make sure that it kind of works on Mac OS. But there's nothing similar to like, will this work with WebKit in a kind of a mobile form factor or something? And so I can imagine it being very useful for something like that, like to just test out and explore and maybe some other things too. But the thing that you're talking about, I believe, initially is embedded still, right? It's like just yes. Embedded devices, like the one in my car that uses like Android Play or something like that. You want to develop some application or maybe your own thing that also is just sort of based on Android, because Android is a Android open source specifically, I guess we should say, right? Because that's it's its own thing. It's really interesting because I can see, maybe I'm wrong, but I think once we're running on Android for embedded devices, the idea of making something that's like even useful as like a web view or something that you could build some more, I don't know, high level thing on top of to develop applications more like Electron or something. I can imagine it being like a lot easier once we had that, at least for like Linux and Android. But is that total bollocks or?
Well, your point is right that I didn't do this differentiation, and not many people knows that it's true that Android is like a kind of like a Linux flavor, a system that basically you can run without all the UI, and you can basically launch and boot a board with Android, but it doesn't mean that you're going to launch any UI. And then you have like the specific Google libraries for the UI, which then you can develop applications for those. that include these Java APIs and everything, where you have like already like a web widget, which is based on Chromium. That we don't want, or at least initially, we don't want to compete with that, because that is something that is specific for Google, and they are doing it, and they had their thing, and everyone probably wants to use that nowadays. At least we don't want to think about it. We are thinking more about using the Android based system without all these layers of Google SDK that they use for their phones. That is basically what we are trying to do, because on that regard, you can use a board with the Android drivers and kernel, and then maybe works better than the Linux support, or maybe there are some like hardware vendor that provides just the Android system. It's true that we are also providing the other part, which means that we are providing the Java API so that you can integrate with an application and maybe replace your Chromium application. But just nowadays, it's just a prototype for development and trying. But yeah, it could be, I mean, you're pointing out like good ideas about how that could evolve at some point to be useful even for people that want to test a WebKit-based rendering engine inside Android devices. Yeah, yeah. I agree that we could have like that goal at some point. Yeah.
So I'm curious, we're creating WP for Android. I presume that Chrome for Android exists. So what are the reasons to pick WPE over Chromium?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think this gets into the kind of three-way distinction of what are we talking about when we're talking about these things?
Yes, yes. The differentiation is that it will be like if you pick the web UI widget that you're using in Android to integrate in your application. So you create an application and you're going to integrate some web content, and then you get that widget. That would be kind of like the idea. Can you create a browser with that and then provide a browser for Android? Yeah, you are going to be able to do that. Are we going to do it? Who knows?
But then, just to clarify with Eric's question, like, I think there's a third thing that we were talking about there too, which is like I don't even know how to say this, but it's like operating system based on the web that is just like the whole thing. It's not a general purpose operating system, right? Like
the idea is that if you want to create your specific application with a UI based in web technologies, and that with Chrome will mean that you need to remove parts of the Chrome UI and use it in kiosk mode, but maybe you have other things. So that doesn't like, it's the same thing that we were talking about the embedded device. Chrome is good if you want to use the Chrome application or Chromium application. But if you want to embed it in a different application and then create a UI based on that, then you are going to be restricted to, again, try to get different, not to have like a stable APR or a stable contract where you can rely on. So basically, you need to get the whole thing and then getting it again and again and then not modifying it that much for your purposes, or you are going to end up doing a lot of work in just maintaining your patches on Chromium.
There's also Chrome OS, which is a whole another level of complexity.
Yeah. I'm not an expert on that. Yeah, I'm not an expert on that, all that environment of.
Yeah, and there's a project that's not owned by Chrome. I think it's basically like one person that maintains it that does like a sort of competitor API. Oh yeah, Chromium Embedded Framework is what I was thinking of back there. But it's probably the more direct comparison if you're talking about like Chrome must exist on Android, and it's like, well, but we're talking about Android open source, which doesn't even have a UI. So
yes, in general, the people that we know that are using Android and that they contact us to integrate a browser, they don't use the SDK or the whole SDK. They create a specific application and they use Android as a as a Unix system, let's call it like that. It's basically a Unix system that you used and has the typical Unix libraries that are, but they are like specific for Android.
So we're going to have to catch up and have a whole bunch of variants here where we have caffeine-free WebKit and WebKit Zero and vanilla WebKit and all these different flavors of WebKit. I do sort of wish they had sort of more independent names that were less overloaded, because it is very difficult to talk about in some cases.
That's true. I mean, there is a business just on that, like providing good names. Maybe it's going to help people to understand, and then they are going to be able to design and think about new ideas. And because in the end, what we are providing is a tool and a part that people can use to create new products and new ideas. And that is our goal. It's like to provide a technology that can bring new products and people can use to be innovative and create things. Because that is the spirit of Igalia since the beginning, that we are tinkerers and we like Linux and we are like open source and we like to touch everything. And we like to provide tools that people can go to a web page, download a board, and then install this piece of software, and then you can create a product with that and then provide it to your friends or create like a company with it, and then you're getting that freedom. That gave us like a really, really interesting and good perspective about different ways of creating products from, I will say, from companies that are not like the big ones, where you can basically put a lot of resources and just do whatever you want.
I don't think that it's generally typically in companies' nature to invest in open source. And finding ideas like WPE that get other people working with open source, particularly like kind of maybe a smaller open source that they have very direct relationship with. I wonder how much of the work that we do ends up doing upstream work and in the, effectively expanding the investment in web engines that benefit everybody.
Yes, that is a great point and a topic that we could talk extensively because we have a lot of experience and because we tried multiple strategies to get funding for open source. That is basically our business. One case there is that people that basically get the source code and then you see it privately and you never know about it. That happens. I mean, because sometimes we know after some time that they are using it. Or some people tell us, oh, Quick is used here. And it's like, oh, we didn't know. That happens. And we have to live with that situation. And it's okay. I mean, the technology that we are providing is what we are trying to create is like this environment where that's an option and it's okay. But it's true that if that would be the only thing that happens, then we wouldn't have like a project like this one, because in the end, we are developers, but we are also like people that need to be paid for our job. So in the end, there are other people that they use it initially and then they come to you and they ask you, we have these issues integrating it. And usually it's because they don't have the experience to know how to use open source. And that's a very common use case, because it's kind of like you're basically using like the stable version. Oh, I'm developing, so I'm going to use the stable version and I'm going to integrate this and I'm going to create my product and everything is going to work fine because my prototype is working fine. And then suddenly a prototype is not like a product. And then maybe you are creating a successful product, but then you have to evolve the product or you are having issues and you want to create the next version. And then suddenly you realize that, oh, maybe I didn't do the initial steps correctly. And now I have this big trouble of creating the next version of the product, but I have a very old version with a huge patch that I don't know exactly how I had to do with that. So let's try to ask for help from these Igalia folks. Or maybe you're having like a big issue that you don't know how to solve. It's like, I have this device and this this JavaScript that I don't know why it's not working and it has a bug, or and it can happen because you're creating something specific that maybe Apple or us are not like paying that much attention, as you know better than me. Like the web platform, it has like very extensive APIs that can be using a very different ways that sometimes like can even surprise you after that many years how it can be used. And then there is like the best scenario, and which is actually what we try to do with those kind of customers. If they have, like, if they have the financial like foundation, we try everyone to use the open source the best way, which is basically that you try to participate in it. Because in the end, if you have like, if you are able to work in tip of the tree and then creating your products with the tip of the tree and then using the stable releases to create, to release your products in every version and then sending every patch and every change that you have upstream, then that is going to reduce your cost in the future. And then you are going to be able to invest in your product and not in the maintenance. I mean, we have a word for this, which is the technical debt. If you are creating a lot of technical debt during the development, you are going to pay it sooner than later. And then suddenly you're going to have like a release where it's going to be basically impossible to maintain your software. So those people are the ones that are like, that we try to get as customers, and we try to help. And I mean, we try to help everyone in the end, because everyone comes here and we're kind people, and then we are trying to solve bugs all over the place and trying to be kind with everyone. But in the end, those are the ones that are maintaining the technology. And sometimes the only reason that they are doing it in a different way is because they don't have the experience or the knowledge to do it the right way, because it's not sometimes about a budget, because you can hire like just some hours, and then with those hours you can really do the work the proper way, which is just because you are integrating in the team and you know exactly what to do, and you need small modifications and not small fixes, and those can be done in a way that they are not going to create a technical debt that is going to grow like mad and then at some point is going to cause a problem for your company in the future. So that's my understanding of the whole thing. And sometimes we do a lot of like education around this, and I think it's interesting because this is a complex topic, and everything around software and how open source works is a complex topic. And people, I mean, one of the key advantages of open source is that you can create a prototype very easily and without talking to anyone. And that's a key advantage. But some people are misguided by that and think that means that they can create a product. And that's a different thing. I mean, a prototype is not a product. And then the proper planning and strategical vision of how to use the open source is a different thing than creating a prototype. And if you fail that, then you're going to end up with issues. But that's our role in the community. And then we also try to do other things, I mean, as you know, trying to create different strategies of people trying to provide support for implementing some feature. But that is like a more general thing. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Like everyone wants like support for whatever API in WebKit, and they can pay for it. But that is kind of like a different perspective, that it works for some things, but not for everything. One of the main things that we did in the last years, which is like moving from Cairo to Skia, was paid by customers like Comcast and Philips. They are like active users and really good contributors of the WebKit community, and they have like the perspective and the interest to improve the software, and we are able to collaborate with that to integrate and evolve technology in ways that are like are helping everyone in the end in the community, and like improving this Lego piece that is going to be able to help other people to create innovative products. that I wouldn't hopefully could use everywhere in the world.
Okay. I think we have to call it for time, but is there any last words that you want to throw or?
Keep an eye on what we are going to develop in the next years, because we are really, we have really amazing plans for the technology that is going to evolve in good ways. And around Android, we have really great plans, and around like even performance and rendering. So I think we are like in a good position nowadays. And even with AI and all these like new developments, we have like a role to play to help multiple companies to really use the web content in ways that can be very useful in general for us, like for the whole world. Yeah.
Very cool. Alex, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks to you. It has been fun.